At one point, I said, okay, everybody put your coffee down. Because it was just as if everyone was a little bit too high strung.
Senator Murkowski talks about the negotiations to end the government shutdown. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Wednesday, October 16th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, Anchorage police unveil a new crime mapping system.
It's going to give us real-time tactical, within hours old or day old data.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. Many Alaskans are choosing to make energy efficiency improvements around their homes. Investing in efficient light bulbs or a programmable thermostat could save hundreds annually. For more tips on how to save money and energy, visit akenergyefficiency.org. This message is sponsored by the Alaska Energy Authority.
The 16-day federal government shutdown appears to be nearing an end, and Alaska's Republican Senator Lisa Murkowski is getting a good deal of the credit. She was one of the first to join a group of senators who began crafting an agreement that led to the measure the Senate passed tonight and the House is expected to approve. The agreement temporarily reopens the government and lifts the debt ceiling while making only a minor change to the Affordable Care Act. Murkowski says she's still against the president's health reform law, as are the majority of constituents who've called her office. But she says the effort to defund the law by shutting down the government was doomed from the start.
If there's anything that we have learned from where we've been over the past couple months is that we need to make sure that the expectations that we set are somewhat achievable. I think that it's important that we do what we can to rein in aspects of this law that I don't think are workable.
Three of the Senate's female Republicans, led by Susan Collins of Maine, started working on solutions the first weekend of the shutdown. Ultimately, they grew to a group of 14, six of them women. Murkowski says she's not sure their gender played a role, but suggests maybe they had a lower tolerance for nonsense, or they just had cooler heads.
At one point, I said, okay, everybody put your coffee down. Because it was just as if everyone was a little bit too high strung and tempers were flaring. And I think that there was a calming effort that some of the women brought, which I think allowed us to continue.
Murkowski says the right wing may try to make her pay for her moderation come election time, but she says she can't let fear of a future attack ad keep her up at night. The agreement only extends government spending until mid-January and the debt ceiling until early February. Murkowski says the real work begins now to reach agreements on spending bills and avoid a replay of the standoff. State Senator Hollis French has announced his plans to run for lieutenant governor. The Anchorage Democrat had been considering jumping into the gubernatorial race, but set aside those plans after former Juneau mayor and former Permanent Fund Corporation director Byron Mallott announced he would seek the Democratic nomination. French says he wanted to avoid expending resources on a competitive primary race.
I came to a place where I could see that he was going to be a stronger general election candidate than I would be. And since I'm really interested in winning, I thought the best way I can help him win is to run for lieutenant governor.
As the incumbent, Governor Sean Parnell is not expected to face any competition in the Republican primary. Bill Walker, who has filed as an independent, just needs to collect signatures to get on the general election ballot. French has served in the state legislature since 2002, and he has run for governor before. He says that even though the candidates for governor and lieutenant governor don't have to run on the same ticket until next August, he and Mallott already plan to support each other.
You'll see us working together on the campaign trail. You'll see us, you know, articulating and emphasizing different issues. But, you know, once we come together as a team, that's when the two platforms have to merge.
Bob Williams, a teacher from the Mat-Su region, filed to run for lieutenant governor as a Democrat earlier this year. The Anchorage Police Department will soon be using new mapping software to track crime around the city in nearly real time. The announcement comes in the wake of an annual FBI report that says serious crime was up last year in Anchorage in nearly every category. KSKA's Daisha Eaton has the story.
In a few weeks, Anchorage police officers will flip open their dashboard laptops and use a Wi-Fi connection to access a map showing where crimes took place around the city during the past 24 hours. APD Chief Mark Muse says he hopes the new crime mapping system will bring the APD up to date technologically and help the department to be more agile at a time when crime is up and the department is short-staffed.
It's going to give us real-time tactical within hours old or day old data, hotspots, geographic places and times. We can diagnose this data, we can make assignments, we can make patrol assignments, detective assignments, and keep on with the crime patterns as they are actually developed.
The department's current mapping system doesn't provide data to officers in their cars. Chief Muse says the strategic crime analysis provided by the FBI's annual report helps the APD to make long-term decisions, but the new mapping system will help first responders make better tactical decisions. Muse says he's been looking for a better way to track crime around the city, especially since the FBI report was released, highlighting a spike in serious crimes in Anchorage in 2012. Violent crimes like murder, rape, robbery, and assault were all up. The only categories that went down were vehicle theft and arson. Chief Mew is quick to note that the overall trend is still down.
We are up across the boards compared to last year. Last year was a near historic low for us. If you compare the numbers against the recent past over the last 8 or 9 years, we are still low in most of these categories.
According to an analysis by researchers at the University of Alaska Justice Center, rape and theft are not only up over last year's numbers, but higher than the 10-year average. Crime is increasing at a time when the number of officers is down. Dozens of officers are set to retire in January due to incentives put in place several years ago.
If you retired by a certain date, you would get a lump sum that would make up for the fact that you missed all your raises. And that date is January 4th of 2014. We normally have about 20 people leave a year. We've already surpassed that, and I expect we'll probably have 40 go this year.
The department is simultaneously having recruiting problems. Muse says they're trying to increase recruiting by modernizing the test recruits take. In the meantime, he hopes the new crime mapping system will help the department cope. Mayor Dan Sullivan, who's filed to run for lieutenant governor in 2014, has touted the decline in crime under his watch. He contends the spike is an anomaly.
Over the last 4 years, if you look at the average, we've got good statistics. We have 1 year with an uptick, which 2012 appears to be. But if you look at the last 4 years compared to the previous 4 years average, you know, it's a pretty good story. If over the next couple of years those statistics continue to go the wrong direction, then you've got a trend.
That's something Derek Schur, a sergeant with the APD and a member of the police union, is worried about. Schur is leading a battle to repeal a new union-busting law supported by the Sullivan administration. He says that putting union benefits on the chopping block could be hurting recruiting numbers. He also notes that the Anchorage Police Department does not offer a pension plan, like most cities of its size. Schur is cautious to draw conclusions from just 1 year of data, but he says the increase in crime, combined with the anticipated decrease in officers, is very concerning.
The number of police officers in Anchorage is dropping, and it's dropping at a rapid rate. We had, just a number of years ago, a high of over 400 officers, and the chief of police is now reporting that by next year we'll have fewer than 335. Simultaneously, we're having an increase in reports of serious and violent crimes in our community, and those two things together generally lead to some pretty serious trouble.
Schur says he thinks the new mapping software is a step in the right direction, but he's certain it will not make up for such a large reduction in staff. APD spokesperson Jennifer Castro says the department plans to have the new mapping system in place by mid-November. It will also be available for the public to track crime in their neighborhoods. Castro says APD will be the first law enforcement agency in Alaska to use the new system. In Anchorage, I'm Daisha Eaton.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, students in Soldotna learn about the life cycle of a salmon.
I liked pretty much most of it, except for the part where they dissected the fish. That part was really weird.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Alaska Business Monthly Magazine, publishing statewide news on Alaska's business sector, government, and industry since 1985. Information and subscriptions online at akbizmag.com. And by ERA. For more than 40 years, ERA Alaska's planes have carried the stories of Alaska. ERA Alaska, bringing Alaskans together. More at flyera.com.
GCI and KTUU Channel 2 came to a temporary agreement yesterday to keep the NBC affiliate carriage in 9 areas outside of Anchorage, at least for the next few weeks. KYUK's Angela Denning Barnes has more from Bethel.
It's a temporary solution to an ongoing contractual dispute between GCI and Schurz Communications. The conflict surfaced when an old agreement expired at the end of September. The rest of the agreement would end in December of 2014. If the two companies can't reach a deal by then, rural Alaska would be hit first. Brad Hilwig is the marketing director for KTUU.
Cable subscribers in virtually all rural areas outside of Anchorage could turn on their TVs and not have access to KTUU TV programming on GCI cable.
With Tuesday's temporary deal, that hasn't happened yet. The details of that agreement are unclear, and what each party wants long-term is also being worked out. David Morris, GCI's vice president, says KTUU has other options for carrying their service.
They don't have to use GCI to get out to rural Alaska. There are a number of other providers that they could use.
Morris says KTUU wants the same free coverage on GCI's cables and satellites as they've had in the past, as well as guaranteed ad revenue from GCI.
And on top of that, they are asking for about $2.5 million in cash for the right to carry their signal.
Right now, KTUU gets no payment from GCI. KTUU's Hilwig says the $2.5 million figure is premature and is unsubstantiated. He says GCI is putting customers in the middle of the negotiations.
What should be happening right now is free carriage of KTUU continuing on GCI in these rural areas so that good faith negotiations for that 2015 and beyond time period can really begin in earnest.
Even if no long-term agreement is reached, some cable and non-cable viewers would still be able to access Channel 2 coverage using ARCS, the Alaska Rural Communication Service. On a regular day, ARCS carries between 5 and 16 hours of Channel 2 programming. The temporary agreement will keep KTU carriage in Bethel, as well as Barrow, Cordova, Kodiak, Kotzebue, Kuparuk, Nome, North Slope, and Valdez until November the 8th. In Bethel, I'm Angela Denning Barnes.
It's been 4 months since the nation's biggest wireless carrier began doing business in Alaska, and despite predictions that Verizon would shake up the state's wireless market, its role has so far been limited to providing high-speed data service in urban areas. KUAC's Tim Ellis reports.
Tracy Peterson has been a loyal Verizon customer for 15 years, but she wondered whether she should stay with the company 2 years ago when she and her family were preparing to move up here.
We've brought our Verizon phones with us against Verizon's suggestion. Oh, you're going to be on an extended network. You're probably not going to have good service.
But Peterson stuck with Verizon because she says she was happy with the company and wanted to keep the same number she had for years so she could stay in touch after her family moved to Delta Junction so her husband could take a job on Fort Greeley. She works as an assistant coordinator at the UAF Community and Technical College branch campus in Delta. Peterson says she was pleasantly surprised to find she gets pretty good cell phone coverage in Delta and good customer support from Verizon. She says there's only one drawback.
I'd say the biggest downfall is the fact that you do have to send your phone to someone you know in the lower 48 to have them program it and send it back to you anytime you buy a new phone.
Verizon spokesman Scott Charleston acknowledged that activating new phones is a problem in Alaska, but he says it'll be solved next year when the company adds high-speed voice service to the 4G LTE data network that the company launched in June in Fairbanks, Anchorage, Wasilla, and Juneau. Charleston says that's new technology that Verizon may introduce here in Alaska before anywhere else.
Voice over LTE, so both voice and data over the same network, That's something that has really not been done on any wide scale.
Charleston says Verizon customers outside cities will have the same 3G voice and data service that's been available over the extended network that Verizon has been leasing from other companies over the past few years. He says it's been a challenge for Verizon to develop the new voice over LTE technology and build a $100 million statewide wireless network largely from scratch.
It's taking some time, frankly, to create both the network that will transfer the higher level of service for voice and also the devices.
Charleston says Verizon will begin selling those devices and contracts for cell phones with 907 area codes when it opens the retail store. It's built in the big East Side Fairbanks shopping complex at the corner of the Johansson and Steese expressways. He says Walmart and Sam's Club in July began selling mobile broadband products such as tablet computers, jetpacks, and routers that will work on the Verizon network. And Charleston says next year, Verizon will begin challenging the three companies that now dominate Alaska's wireless business. Those are AT&T Mobility, which is estimated to have more than half of the state's cell phone customers. GCI is second, and Alaska Communications is third. In Delta, I'm Tim Ellis.
Unconventional oil and gas development will be part of the discussion on Friday when energy advisory consultant David Goldwin speaks at an Alaska World Affairs Council event. Goldwin is co-author and editor of Energy and Security, Strategies for a World in Transition. The revised second edition addresses new energy frontiers, rising safety concerns for energy complexes, and energy poverty. Goldwin says the revolution in shale development in the lower 48 has changed the future of domestic energy development.
I think we are looking at significant supply growth for the foreseeable future, probably peaking at about 8 million barrels a day of oil and over 100 years of supply of gas. So I think the supply side is pretty secure. I think on the safety and environmental side, I think there have been some significant missteps by industry, initially resisting disclosure, which was a huge mistake. And now the conversation, I think, has evolved to concerns about wellbore safety. Can you make sure that none of the gas gets into drinking water aquifers? And then methane emissions. Can you capture the methane that comes up from the wellbore and through the pipelines? And water safety. Can you make sure that the produced water is secured and recycled and disposed of in a safe way? So I think there are technological answers to ensure that safety can be provided throughout the entire value chain. The question is whether or not the regulations, primarily state regulations, are requiring that those best practices be used, and whether or not there's sufficient enforcement capability state by state to make sure that the low-cost producers, the ones that are thinly capitalized, do the right thing, and if not, that they're punished.
You mentioned 100 years of gas supply. What do you think that means for the much hoped for in Alaska gas line that has been talked about for decades? And it seemed for a time that maybe it would come to fruition because gas prices were rising across the world. And then, of course, the shale explosion in energy development in the lower 48. What do you think this means for the viability of Alaska gas?
Well, I think the future of Alaskan gas is for export, not for consumption in the continental United States. That said, the opportunities for export of natural gas are really quite robust on a worldwide basis. From a climate change perspective, there is enormous opportunity to substitute gas for coal and in parts of the world for biomass. So there's an awful lot of demand. But it's a challenge. There's a lot of stranded gas in the world. And the ability to move that gas, to produce it at an economically recoverable rate, to build a transportation system that is cost-effective, and then to liquefy it and transport it is not easy. And I think Alaska is going to have to compete for that opportunity with Australia and Qatar and a number of others.
All of this fossil fuel development is, of course, up against the backdrop of a changing climate, especially in Alaska, where it's happening much faster than other parts of the country and the world. Do you address this in your book, and what do you think needs to happen to mitigate those climate concerns?
that's really addressed throughout the book. Dr. Moniz and other authors talk about it as well. I think we've got an opportunity from this oil and gas boom in the U.S. and the tight gas boom, if it propagates worldwide, to get some short and medium-term greenhouse gas reductions. And that's because for the next 10 years, we can get more greenhouse gas reductions by substituting gas for coal and for biomass, and in places like the Middle East for oil, which they burn for electricity, than we can from any other technology in the market. So I think we really need to secure those gains and embrace natural gas for now. But we're never going to get to 50% reductions by 2050 until we have some technological breakthroughs, and those are on carbon sequestration and utility-scale battery storage.
David Goldwin is a co-author of Energy and Security, Strategies for a World in Transition. He'll be speaking in Anchorage on Friday. Links are at our website, alaskapublic.org.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Crowley. Celebrating 60 years in Alaska, Crowley knows Alaska and uses that experience to deliver project solutions from concept to completion. More at crowleyalaska.com. The Kinnick Arm Bridge and Toll Authority is developing the Kinnick Arm Crossing to further develop the transportation system between Anchorage and the Matsu Borough. The bridge could create construction jobs, provide access to land for commercial, industrial, and residential development, and shorten the route to Alaska's interior and North Slope. There's more information on the Kinnick Arm Bridge at kinnickarmbridge.com. This message sponsored by the Kinnick Arm Bridge and Toll Authority.
University of Alaska Fairbanks Vice Chancellor Pat Pitney is participating in the Olympic torch relay to the February 2014 Winter Games in Sochi, Russia. As KYC's Dan Bross reports, she's running in an exotic leg of the relay being staged at the geographic North Pole.
Pat Pitney is familiar with Olympic festivities. She won gold in shooting at the 1984 Summer Games, but her torch relay run will be on the wild side. Pitney is one of eight representatives from Arctic nations riding a Russian icebreaker this week to the North Pole, where Pitney says they will carry the torch on the frozen sea.
They'll let the torch runners off the ship and then do a symbolic run around the North Pole.
Pitney says participants will each run about 200 meters with the Olympic torch. The 3,000-mile trip to and from the pole will take 2 weeks, and Pitney anticipates an amazing experience.
Carrying the torch and representing the U.S. and, you know, this Arctic collaboration literally on the North Pole. And the experience getting to North Pole will be unforgettable.
Additional to her primary job as a vice chancellor at the University of Alaska Fairbanks, Pitney also serves as vice president of the University of the Arctic, a network of 160 learning and research institutions, including UAF, dedicated to strengthening higher education across the region. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
Students from the Central and Southern Kenai Peninsula schools gathered at the Anchor River Friday to learn about the salmon life cycle. The Kenai Peninsula Borough School District is partnering with the Alaska Department of Fish and Game to teach kids about one of the state's most valuable resources. KBBI's Ariel Van Cleve has the story.
Yeah! Yeah! Stick your hand in here and shake them out.
That's the sound of a herd of children reacting to eggs pouring out of a female salmon. Fishery biologist Jenny Cope was explaining to the kids that almost 2,000 eggs were inside that fish. And that's the reaction as one of Cope's brave assistants from the crowd added the next ingredient in the egg fertilization process using a male fish. Cope said the mixture needed one last thing.
I think we have a milkshake, but I don't think they're fertilized. What do we need? That's right. Coho salmon just don't get up out of the creek and come up to a table and spawn. They're spawning in the river where there's water.
She then added water from the river.
This is the birthday of your coho salmon. First day of its life. What should we say? One, two, three.
Happy birthday!
The kids took some eggs back with them to their classrooms to watch them mature. Part of Cope's presentation to the students was explaining what they'll see during that process.
At this stage, the eggs are very, very fragile, okay? They're extremely susceptible to being damaged. So when you take your cup of eggs back to the classroom, you're going to want to be very careful with them. You don't want to shake them. You don't want to accidentally drop your cooler that you're transporting them in. Once you've put your eggs into the aquarium, do you want to mess with the aquarium at all?
No.
No, you want to leave those eggs.
Cope says the next stage is called eyed egg. Next month, the kids will likely begin seeing two little black dots appear.
They'll keep moving around in their egg, and if you look closely in your aquarium, you can kind of see them bouncing around a little bit.
Soon enough, that little guy squirming around inside the egg will bust free and bring on the next stage.
Alvin!
Very good.
Cope explained that this is an exciting time in the fish's life cycle because you get to see the heart pumping and the digestive system forming. Even the spine begins to form and is visible.
And if you're lucky, maybe your teachers will take one out and put underneath a microscope for you to see all the detail.
Next up is the fry stage. And that's when these little fish will leave the comfort of the classroom and venture out on their own.
So in May, you'll have fry that you get to release into one of our approved lakes.
Salmon is such an important part of life on the peninsula that I guess we try to get an early appreciation of what's involved, how they can protect the resource.
Bill Vetters is a third grade teacher at Cay Beach Elementary in Soldotna.
I mean, really, you know, the kids are the future, and if they can take care of the resource for their generation and then pass it on, I guess we're going kind of for a generational thing to keep, you know, keep it as it always has been.
He says proximity to salmon doesn't always mean the kids are knowledgeable about it.
Maybe they're not from a sport fishing family or commercial fishing family, so they don't really get to see salmon other than, you know, maybe they'll see it on the dinner table or whatever. But, I mean, it's amazing that, I mean, we live so close to this incredible resource, and a lot of kids never really get to experience it.
Cay Beach student Fiona Wolf was one of a dozen or so kids whose hand shut up each time Cope asked a question. She says she enjoyed the presentation, for the most part.
I liked it a lot.
What did you like about it? Was there anything in particular?
I liked pretty much most of it, except for the part where they dissected the fish. That part was really weird.
Cope and other fishery biologists on the peninsula will be heading into the classrooms throughout the school year to do salmon dissections. Kids also will have a chance to go ice fishing with Cope in the winter, and then in the spring, the students will have the annual salmon celebration. The program all leads up to that moment when the fry are released and continue growing before they wind up, as Vetter said, on the dinner plate. In Homer, I'm Ariel Van Cleve.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. We had reports tonight from Dacia Eaton in Anchorage, Angela Denning Barnes in Bethel, Tim Ellis in Delta, Dan Bross in Fairbanks, and Ariel Van Cleve in Soldotna. APRN's Alexandra Gutierrez reported from Juneau, and Liz Ruskin from Washington, D.C. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Josh Edge is our web producer. And I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, committed to safety, operating the 800-mile Trans-Alaska Pipeline for 35 years. Those living with asthma know that each day their life can take several different routes. So take care of yourself with daily medication and you'll be well-rested and eager to take on the day. Miss taking your medication and you'll end up with restless sleep, days at home sick, or even in the emergency room. So treat your asthma, even when you're feeling your best, to keep you from your worst. Information at asthmainalaska.org or 1-800-LUNG-USA. This message sponsored by the American Lung Association. Join Alaska bars and restaurants from every corner of the state in taking a stand against secondhand smoke. The fact of the matter is, no Alaskan, employee, or customer should suffer the heart disease and lung cancer due to secondhand smoke. The benefits are undeniably positive for Alaskans and for the bottom line. Clean indoor air. It's good for health, and it's great for business. For more information on smoke-free workplaces, visit alaskatca.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Tobacco Control Alliance.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.